Sitting in a living room, sitting on the porch. It's your words, gonna light that torch. Tell it in a city park, tell it in a bar, tell it in the backseat of your grandma's car. No tales too pure, our failures lure. The poor house sure wants to hear what's bubbling in your brain.
Welcome to the second half of The Sentence I Hate Most. Remember, most of these writers were given a prompt, given just an hour to write. Shortly thereafter, they performed for us all. So, welcome to the second half.
Danny Purcell is filled with rage. She hates money. Warm clocks?
Alarm clocks.
Oh! She hates alarm clocks. Passive aggression and Minnesota liquor laws. Yes. She's having trouble thinking of an additional clever sequence.
Sentence.
All right. Danny, which of the prompt words did you use?
The only one I was able to work in was this sentence I hate most.
Okay, well, that's primary.
Mm-hmm.
That's necessary.
That's a good thing.
Okay. Thanks, Dan. Let's hear the story.
This is called I Hate the Last 24 Hours. Just to preface this, I wrote it right before I came here because that's when the rage got that intense. I hate being the unfortunate girl with the biggest ass in this Midwestern bar. I'm suspicious of several individuals within the vicinity for some pretty schizotypal reasoning. I loathe the girls prancing in front, rushing their hot jig to the spring of the dance floor because I am bored, and this Alice in Chains ripoff band does not make me feel like dancing. Thanks for the offer, though. I need a cigarette and find it irritating that one is now unable to smoke them in appropriate places, like bars. Tonight's conditions don't improve outdoors. Two slobbering hicks hollering across the street to other hicks, clenching their fists, beating their chests beneath affliction and tap-out shirts, pulled over lean, bulging biceps, bare in Minnesota December. And I have a theory that exceptionally stupid people are unaffected by the cold. The wind bites through just about any layer I'm wearing, and man, do I hate being hot in the wrong places and cold everywhere else. I hate everything. This is why I own Jack. Jack is my guitar, and he takes things very personally if I don't hold him for at least 2 hours a day. So it annoys the piss out of me when some unidentified bitch from my apartment complex leaves passive-aggressive notes on my door telling me to shut up, stop playing the guitar, enough is enough. This sentence I hate most. I hate when people tell me to shut up. I hate not being taken seriously. There was a shrink I used to visit who deduced that not being taken seriously seriously bothers me. I'm an arrogant thing, and I do not like being made to feel insignificant. I never cried in front of him, although there were tissues on the glass coffee table, and my friend Christina told me she sat shaking in the armchair, dabbing her round blue eyes and used up the rest of the box. She apologized. He smiled and opened the door to the filing cabinet. He had an entire shelf used exclusively to stock Kleenex. I almost cried the last time I saw him. I asked him if he thought I was crazy. He said I seemed perfectly lucid and coherent, whatever that means, see-through. He wore pants that were too short, and I spent the next 40 minutes fixated on a sinuous blonde hair stuck on the static of his sock. He said he hoped I would come back. I didn't say anything. He never understood me. Just like this affliction guy doesn't get that you just can't walk up to a stranger and pull that whole drunk creeper hand. That sly placement on the small of the back on any uninterested, unsuspecting female. He says, "Sup, babe, you wanna go screw in the bathroom?" I have changed my mind. It is now this sentence I hate most. I work a haze stare determined into his glassy eyes like slits filled with something alcoholic and toss my butt to the pavement. I have accepted that things aren't getting any better, and just like that shrink, he doesn't understand me. So I stride back into warmth, what I wish I could call safety.
Woo! Our next reader tonight is Amy Flatabo. Amy's social security number is 367-24-62-blank-blank. She is the daughter of Craig Flatabo and Lori Swanson. Amy's birth date is 9-14-1981, and she banks with Wells Fargo. Her checking account number is 067-00-41-blank-blank-blank. She's a student and a writer with no money for you to steal, so... Okay. Amy, what of the prompts did you use today?
I used a very furry red squirrel, silver money clip, this sentence I hate most, of course, and a little girl named Greta.
Okay, so Amy's batting 800%.
I was not very pleased with your prompt.
What was wrong with it?
I just think it's a little unreasonable.
How so?
Well, I was particularly displeased with the masseuse named Kelly, which I could not find any way to add to my story.
It's funny because I dream of putting Kelly to use in so many ways. All right, Amy, we look forward to your story.
Male or female, right?
Yeah, whichever.
Okay, this is Becoming My Mother. I've been pre-qualified for the new no-fee Expedia Rewards Visa Plus card that features a number of exciting benefits, but I don't read on. Instead, I rip the letter into small squares and toss it into the trash. This square ripping method is something I've picked up from my mother. Except she used to throw a third of the squares into the kitchen trash, a third into the toilet, and another third into the sink's garbage disposal. Identity theft protection. I'm not as paranoid, just enjoy ripping things. I glance out the window to see a very furry red squirrel who is in a ripping frenzy of his own, propped atop a bird's nest, pulling strands of newspaper from the conglomerate of twigs, leaves, sticks, a plastic bag, what appears to be a condom, and clumps of dirt. I'm sure the little guy would rather be hijacking the sunflower seeds from the bird feeder, but unfortunately for him, my mom's paranoia is not limited to identity theft. She's also very concerned about her birds being well fed. This concern leads to a number of meticulously placed squirrel booby traps throughout the yard. My personal favorite is the feeder's pole all lubed up with Crisco. It's hilarious to watch the critters back up for a running start, leaping to the pole to pump their feet like maniacs on a treadmill, moving a foot or two up, then sliding all the way back down. I also quite enjoy the silver money clip that holds an electric blue raspberry fruit roll-up in the trap box. The trap's been idle for weeks, the fruit roll-up collecting all sorts of debris, the money clip beginning to lose its luster, mom's certainty faltering, but her paranoia growing stronger than ever. She's also got this thing about restaurants, always terrified that some greasy cook is back there spitting in her food, plucking out his unmentionable hairs to garnish a dish or adding boogers to her guacamole. I know it's not unheard of, but the way she examines a dish is out of control. She has a special kit she brings along to verify the purity of her meal before eating. The kit contains a magnifying lens, chlorine strips, Q-tips, and tweezers for proper handling of questionable specimens, and protective eyewear. It's so embarrassing eating out with her. She always orders a Diet Coke and then spends all this time analyzing its carbonation level as if one bubble short will cause serious harm to the health content of Coke. She taps the straw and jerks her head back to get the widescreen view. She then holds the glass up, turning it in circles, calculating the fizz factor. If there's a light above, she shoves the Coke under the light, swiftly switching from standing upright to crouching to catch all the angles. She sits down, taps the straw again, then presses her lips to the plastic, sipping the tiniest volume of liquid possible in a single slurp. If she's unsure, she sips again. Still unsure, she demands everyone at the table taste it. But when she's sure, oh God, it's humiliating. Her hand shoots to the air like Amity Schneider from second grade. Hate her. She's knew everything. She resorts to flapping her arm up and down, waving the waiter over like a full-on swim stroke. When he arrives, she says this sentence I hate most. Your carbonation is off? Jeez. Before I can even begin to roll my eyes obnoxiously enough for the waiter to realize I'm not in on this, she's brooded her way to the back kitchen. I slump down in the booth as I, and probably the whole restaurant, can overhear her tutorial on proper fountain soda machine maintenance. Seriously, am I gonna be like this someday? A little girl named Greta, my cousin's daughter, spots me from across the cafe. She runs over and plops down in the seat my mom has left. With her crooked pigtails, her t-shirt smeared with red sauce, remnants of her spaghetti lunch smeared across her face, and a giant, happy Tootsie Roll Tootsie Pop pressed against the inside of her cheek. She looks like a squirrel with a puffy winter storage supply. "Hi, Greta. How are you?" I say. She pops out the sucker to answer, "Good, it's my birthday tomorrow." Her excitement causes immediate lack of coordination, and her tootsie falls to the floor. She disappears under the table for a minute, then pops up, sucker first. It's caked with dirt, some hair, part of a napkin. She pulls off the paper and eyes the candy with obvious determination. I lean forward to stop her, then stop myself, as I catch Mom out of the corner of my eye, sitting at my cousin's table with her protective eyewear on. I turn back to Greta. "So, what do you want for your birthday?" I ask as she shoves the sticky mess into her mouth.
How small would the elves have to be to bake all their cookies in the bonsai tree? How small would the birds need to be to build a nest with those tiny leaves? You gotta know there's no way that could be. There ain't no elves residing in the bonsai tree. Well, I did some research on the subject and stumbled upon some interesting facts. Turns out there's no such thing as elves, and those cookies are made in factories. There's no art to the chocolate swirl. It's just a machine doing its daily routine. But let's just pretend for a second. Take all that fact and forget it. Picture him standing on that coffee table and marching like the Seven Dwarfs. Have to be to bake all their cookies in the bonsai tree. How small would the birds need to be to build a nest with those tiny leaves? You gotta know there's no way that could be. There ain't no elves residing in the bonsai tree.
All right, thanks so much to Mankato musician extraordinaire for participating in the show with us. That was Lee Hankey. Great song. Now back to the stories.
All right, Jim Burt is a native New Yorker who spent a couple of decades as a drummer on the West Coast and gave it up to learn how to write about it in the MFA program here at Minnesota State University. Jim, which of the prompts did you use?
I managed to get them all in.
Ooh.
I did. The red squirrel was running around my head the most, though.
Okay. The furry red squirrel.
Furry red squirrel, yeah. It took me a while to get to them all, but...
Okay. Well, bat in 1,000, Jim Burt.
This sentence I hate the most is the one I love the most, because if my sentence does its job, I get paid. And I get paid big bucks. In fact, the more bucks you spend as a direct result of my sentence, the more bucks I make. So thank you, and I'm sorry. You see, my job is to write sentences that somehow persuade you to go out and buy things, or do things that you didn't know you wanted to buy or do until you read my sentence. I'm an ad man, a slogan man. Remember that time you were standing in the toothpaste aisle at the supermarket, ready to grab a tube of Crest because it was the closest one to you, and your wife says, "Honey, no, get the Colgate, it's got MFP. And you do, of course, because she is your wife. But you think to yourself, MFP, don't they make bowling pins? And so you ask her, but she doesn't know, and says only that None of the others have it, so this must be the best one. And you buy it for $1.29 more than all the others. You read the box, which has my sentence in big, bold advertising type letters on the back, Colgate with MFP. And you think you did the right thing, because this has something in it that nobody else has. And you throw away the box, never reading any further, to see that MFP only means more fluoride protection. Which, in reality, doesn't mean anything at all. But we ad men don't like reality. If we did, I wouldn't be able to come up with this sentence for the new collection of Old Spice deodorants that have pictures of mountains and beaches and prairies on the front. The freshest places on earth, now in armpit form. And so you buy the one called Matterhorn because it promises you will smell like ice and wind and freedom, whatever freedom smells like. And you long for that day when you're out on the ski slopes with your wife and she turns to you with a sexy look in her eyes and says, "Honey, this mountain smells like your armpit." And you embrace passionately, and I get to upgrade my cable TV package. But I hate myself for fooling you, really. And I'm haunted by what my sentences can do. The one I hate the most is the one that caused a sweet little girl named Greta to go crazy and ultimately kill a very large, very fit, but very blind masseuse named Kelly Quimby, owner of Kelly Quimby's Squirrely Juice and Beauty Bar. It was a juice bar specializing in its own brand of intoxicating juices, which were purported to contain a special ingredient extracted from the stomach of squirrels. And it was a beauty parlor offering everything from manicures to massages. Now, Kelly Quimby spelled his name with a Q and always posed with a mascot, Peppy, a red squirrel draped around his neck. So I came up with this sentence. Squirrely Qs, we mind our P's and Q's with the baddest juice and the best masseuse. Which, of course, means nothing at all. But it convinced naive little Greta to give it a try and sign up for the Squirrely Q Special Massage. Little did she know that the Squirrely Q Special involved a very live, very furry red squirrel, usually Peppy himself if it was Kelly who was giving the massage. What Kelly would do was get the furry little creature stoned on a special batch of squirrely juice so that it would lose all the feeling in its feet. He would then set Peppy down ever so briefly on a bed of smoldering Jack Daniels-laced charcoal briquettes, sprinkled with the same squirrely juice, and then place the furry little creature onto the back of the massagee. Next, he will hold a brilliant silver money clip above the head of the squirrel, dangle it there, and swing it around, causing Peppy to chase after it like a little kitten being chased with a string of yarn. This resulted in a frantic dance of squirrely abandon, causing tiny little scratches in the skin from Peppy's toenails, which then allowed small amounts of Jack Daniels and juice to seep into the body of the massagee, promoting an elevated state of relaxation. Greta, however, being new to all this, lay not on her back but on her stomach, and Kelly, being blind, did not realize this and set Peppy down on poor little Greta's breasts, which naturally caused her some anxiety when the creature started ripping into her tits with its toenails in a disco-like frenzy. Not knowing that it was part of the massage, she screamed and grabbed Peppy by his tail and flung him into Kelly's face, where the excitedly stoned little squirrel proceeded to stomp all over it like Jennifer Beals in Flashdance. Greta jumped up, bumped into Kelly, knocking him off balance. Peppy got his front paws tangled in Kelly's hair, freaked out, and started ripping his face apart with his hind legs as Kelly screamed, "Peppy! Peppy, no! Peppy, please!" He fell backwards, stumbled over the table with the bed of hot coals, and being blind and all, ran screaming toward the window where the momentum of his large size caused him to crash through it, sending him down 5 stories to the street below, where he bounced into traffic and got hit by a Greyhound bus, killing him instantly. Greta had to seek therapy for 2 years. I got to upgrade my TV from a 47-inch to a 52-inch. And Peppy apparently hitched a ride on the Greyhound to Cleveland, where he shacked up with an overweight chipmunk named Carl.
We'll be right back.
That was Trent Fast of the Mankato band Body Politic, with a solo song of his own called Up in the Sky. Check out Body Politic on Facebook for more information about the band.
I'm here with Maggie Ryan Sanford in an annex, a bohemian annex looking over an avenue in St. Paul, Minnesota. Maggie Ryan Sanford is an artist and a performer and a great writer. So enjoy. This is This Sentence I Hate Most. Maggie.
That was the ripcord, he said. This again, I said. You son of a bitch. We couldn't hear each other over the roar of our 712-mile-per-hour freefall, but it didn't matter. We'd been here before. Today would mark the 477th time we'd done the face-to-face tandem since our marriage in 1978. 59 times before that, by the time we started keeping count for the papers, and the 16th time he had pulled this crap. Literally pulled that damned cord out of his useless sack and let it flap impotently in the wind like those inflatable tubes that announce free lube jobs at discount tire places. You a-hole, I mouthed to him, hard. I am in no mood. The first time he tried this little prank, that was on me. It was in April 1st sometime, and I should have known better as soon as he uttered those words. So simplistic, so sophomoric in their blatancy, but I was still young and trusting, still secretly invested in complimenting my cutthroat feminism by engaging in fulfilling, no, empowering coitus with a sensitive man who is both healer and mother as a masseuse-slash-certified Lamaze instructor. Why, Kelly? I mouthed his name harder, gritting my teeth. His timing for this prank was purposefully enigmatic. The only way he knew to keep drawing a reaction from me, to pull this crap when I least expected it. Each time he would wait it out longer and longer before wrapping his arms around me to let me stir my hands in his pack, to let loose the parachute that would inevitably save our married lives. I glared into the black spaces in his goggles and pulled my goggles up so he could really take it in. The gall. I'd put on mascara and everything. We had a good 30 more seconds before we had to stir the chute, but I meant business right then and there. Kelly, I said to him, though my words flew into the stratosphere. I wormed my hands around his ribs where he would have been ticklish if he hadn't been wearing his harness. I don't need this anymore. I can die alone. I don't care. The children are adults and the dogs hate me anyway. He ran his hands up my back, where it usually turns me on so much when I'm not wearing my harness, up my neck and cradled my head in his hands. We somersaulted slowly until I was beneath him, looking up like a maiden on some cover of some damn romance book called something like Master of Desire. When you're free-falling, you don't have to worry about breathing because the sheer gravitational force of your body through the miles of atmosphere forces oxygen right into your skin. Yet I felt out of breath. I reached up to Kelly's ruddy face, wind-burned and freckled, and dusted with the softest sprouts of strawberry blonde whiskers, turning silver at his temples. And when I lifted his goggles, tears the size of blueberries burst out, flew up and out of sight, streaks of salt water strained his brows, enhancing his look of surprise. Kelly, I said up to him. I reached around to his chute pack, threadbare, chewed to shreds by a family of rats that had recently multiplied in the hangar. Carefully, tenderly, he unclipped the harness straps between my thighs from around my waist. I unzipped my jumpsuit, unclipped my bra, let them flutter away miles behind us. I wrapped my legs around him and he held me around the shoulders. You son of a bitch, I mouthed, and we fell.
That's all for now. The second half of the show, This Sentence I Hate Most. Thanks so much for listening to Tales from the Poorhouse. We sure appreciate it. Thanks so much to KMSU for broadcasting us into the great English department at Minnesota State Mankato. We'll talk next time.
Sitting in a living room, sitting on the porch. It's your words, gonna light that torch. Tell it in a city park. Tell it in a bar. Tell it in the backseat of your grandma's car. No tales too pure. Our failures lure. The poorhouse sure wants to hear what's bubbling.